How many of you like to cook? Anyone like to cook? Some of you are like, no. No, I don't. How many of you have to cook? Yeah, that's maybe a better question. In my house, we make meals, sometimes, some days to kind of just survive, and put food on the table. But we typically really enjoy cooking, and we can get very into the details of our meals and recipes and planning it and trying new things. And I think both Lauren and I really like creativity. When we're cooking and try out new things. And we actually live in a time and place, and with a lot of us with resources, that we get to experience a lot of culinary diversity if we want. Foods from all over the world and flavors that have been introduced to our cuisine and our culture, and we get to kind of mix and match, and it's kind of exciting if you really enjoy it. But when you really boil it down or reduce it, that's a cooking joke, because boiling down is... Anyway. When you really boil it down or reduce it, what we need and what all meals come down to in the end is food and drink. And if you lived in a society where potable water was not necessarily easy to come by, what you would look for and need was bread and wine. Bread stands in the scriptures for the basic necessities of life. That's why we pray, give us this day our daily bread. Give us those things that we most basically need to survive and be alive. And central then to the task of living creatures, and this isn't just humans, but just any living creature, central to what we do is to find ways of being fed, so that we can have life. And so bread and the search and need for bread becomes a central image of our spirituality and of what it means to be human and to have relationship with God. The need of and the search for and God's provision of bread, literally and spiritually, is a core aspect of the biblical story. And we're just going to take a flyover of that story, and so you can see how integral the search for and need for and provision of bread is to our spiritual story. And we could go back to the very beginning, but we're going to start with Joseph. Joseph, part of the way in which God blesses Egypt through him and fulfills that promise to Abraham to be a blessing to all the world through God's people, is that he helps them to provide food when famine comes. That's part of the great blessing. And in fact, what brings Jacob's family, Joseph's brothers and father Jacob, down to Egypt is a famine in their land, and their search for bread, their search for food, brings the family down to Egypt. And they prosper there. And then, when they prosper too much, and Pharaoh gets a little upset, bread becomes a symbol for the people of their liberation and leaving of Egypt. Unleavened bread. God says, you're going to be going out of here in a hurry, so make sure you have bread that doesn't rise. And they end up having the feast of unleavened bread as a symbol of God's power to liberate them. And then when they're in the wilderness, they cry out to God, and what they cry is, God, we need food. We need something to eat to survive. And God sends what? What does God send? The manna. He sends the manna to them. And the manna then, this bread-like thing, becomes a symbol both of our human anxiety about not having enough and God's faithfulness to provide for our needs. In the book of Ruth, the small book of Ruth, it is famine that drives Naomi and her husband and sons away from their home in Israel to Moab, where they meet Ruth. And it is then the fulfillment or the prosperity of bread that brings Ruth and Naomi back home to Bethlehem, which incidentally means, anyone know what Bethlehem means? It means house of bread, incidentally. And that is where Ruth meets Boaz, and they have a child, Obed, and that becomes the line of David, and eventually the line of Jesus from Bethlehem. A few weeks ago during, I don't know, February, we looked at the story of Elijah, when Elijah the prophet is fed up, if you will, and ready to quit. He's sleeping, and God shows up to him, and the first thing that the angel that God sends does is feed him and says, you need bread for the journey. The invitations of the prophets, one of which we looked at this morning from Isaiah 55, often have to do with feasts that God is spreading for us. And they ultimately point to the Christ, to the Messiah, who is born in, of course, Bethlehem, the house of bread. And the Gospels are replete with feeding stories. Not all of the same stories show up in the four different Gospels, but there are more than four feeding stories, and they show up in each and every one of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John's accounts of Jesus. And if we want to tie up the whole story together, we know that it was eating that was core to the fall. She took and ate from the tree. And it is eating that is central to our redemption. As Jesus says, take and eat. So we see from this story, just this quick overview, that our literal need for food and our spiritual need for God overlap. And one of the best places we see this is in the practice of fasting. The concept of fasting is to experience the feeling of physical hunger as a window into our spiritual hunger and need for God. But beyond that, we see in Isaiah 58, we see this text here that says, "Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry?" God says part of the purpose of fasting is so that you can take whatever food you may have eaten and share it with others. And then we see, of course, in John 6, as Kathy read earlier, that bread and the provision of God for our needs and for our hungers is central to Jesus' self-understanding and the God we find revealed to us through Jesus Christ. And so ultimately, these things must overlap our physical needs and our spiritual needs. In the story from John 6, the people were so obsessed with the ways that Jesus had provided for their physical needs that they miss and they can't accept the deeper hunger and need that Jesus desires to meet when he says, "I am the bread of life that God has sent down from heaven. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." And they're like, "No, we're just kind of interested in having enough food for the dinner table, Jesus." But these things have to overlap in our lives and in our ministry. And so then as we reflect on all of this, we reflect on how feeding and food has been really central to our ministry here at Point Place United Church of Christ. Go back to the salad luncheons that were served for many, many years. They started back in the 60s, I believe. Even. So for many years, served these salad luncheons that brought in people from all over the community. You've been serving meals at St. Paul for, do you know how long, Lori? How long have you been partnering with St. Paul? Let's say decades. And one of my favorite stories that gets told is when some of y'all went to St. Paul to feed a meal, and they had double booked themselves, and so this other group was there, and they had plenty of food for everyone, and so whoever was there took the food and went to somewhere downtown, right? And just opened up the van and started feeding people. And people came and ate, and the people were happy. I mean, that sounds a lot like John 6 to me, personally. That's a great story. And then, of course, as we have another meal. We had a meal last week. I'm sorry about this mic thing. It keeps kind of slipping on me. What's going on here? There we go. Hopefully that'll... I think my ear changes shape every week. I don't know. We had a meal last week. We have a meal coming up this week, Feed My Sheep. And that came out of a retreat, a Lenten retreat. And Lori and Tina were telling the story for the 100th anniversary. And they said, we realized we wanted to be known in our community as a church that feeds the community. And we have. And as we know, over the last year, through Alicia's leadership, and now Terry has down there with her, we've expanded this feeding ministry downtown. And this week, we took 40 meals downtown and served whoever wanted them, whoever was in need. And so this feeding has been such a core element of who we are as a church and what we do and how we serve and how we are known. And it was these experiences that inspired this year our Maundy Thursday service, where Jesus tells this parable and says, go into the streets and invite whoever to join in the feast. And we served a full meal, just like a Feed My Sheep meal, alongside a communion meal. We gave out plates of food. We gave out Bibles. We served people physically and spiritually. We fed people with our food, with food and with our presence. And honestly, they fed us with their presence and their words of gratitude and encouragement. So then as we think about the future of the church, I think it's worthwhile to continue mining the rich themes of hunger and bread and food that we find not only in the scriptural story, but in our story together. And it is deeply true that we first need to be fed. We need to be fed by God. We need food for our tables, to be sure. We also need food for our souls. And I want to just make mention that that is not... Our souls need more than a 20-minute sermon on Sunday mornings. And that's why sometimes I preach 25 or 30 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. Our souls need to be fed at least as often as our bodies, friends. A sermon is not meant to sustain you through the week. A sermon is meant to give you direction. It's almost like grocery shopping, so that you can take these ingredients home and prepare meals and sit at the table and set the table so that God can meet you and feed you in the scriptures and in prayer throughout the week. We need to be fed here deeply. We need to learn to listen, read, and chew on the word of God to us every day. And we need to remember then that as we feed others and provide meals and put plates on tables so that people can enjoy our cooking, that this kind of feeding of others will only satisfy one hunger unless we go the next step. And so our feeding ministries must go in two directions. One, they must go deeper. We need to be sure that we are receiving bread for our soul, and we need to consider how are we feeding the souls of others that we come into contact with, whether it's at Feed My Sheep or out in downtown or wherever it is. How do we go deeper? And then secondly, how do we go wider? How do we get out into the streets and have a radar for hunger, for the hunger that is all over the place? The physical hunger, but also the spiritual hunger. And it is all over the place. What is addiction? What is suicide? What is fear? They are all symptoms of an emptiness inside of us that we seek to fill in various ways. As the philosopher Pascal once said, each of us has a God-shaped hole in us. And we try and fill it with all kinds of different things, but ultimately, if we're not filling it with God, we will continue to be empty and hungry in ways that are harmful to us. Where are people hungry? That's where the church is called to go and be. And so, friends, as we approach the table this morning, I encourage you to consider two questions. One, how does God feed you? How does God feed you? How does God satisfy you? What are times and places and practices that have fed your soul? How are you setting the table for God to feed you right now? Allow yourself to be satisfied. So that was like six questions, but that's really one, the first question. How does God feed you? And second, how are you participating in the feeding of others? And again, this is a multi-layered and dimensional question, right? How are you finding hungry people and feeding them, whether it's feed my sheep and participating there, going downtown, or whether it is finding people's other hungers and with your presence and love and grace, sharing good news with them and encouraging them? How are you participating in God's feeding of the world?